This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to yet another episode of Real Talk University. On today's episode, we feature Josh Luber, the CEO and founder of StockX. Basically, StockX is like a stock market for sneakers. You can go on there, resell your shoes for a profit, buy shoes for a pretty good deal, and it keeps the reselling market pretty honest, as like all the prices reflect what the buyers actually want rather than resellers taking advantage of sneaker buyers. So it was really awesome to interview a guy who I use his app, like his app StockX. I use a ton for buying and selling. So to hear the mind behind the app itself was truly incredible. We had about 30 minutes to sit down with Josh, hear about what he plans to do with the company in the future, how he came up with the idea, and how it's been successful thus far. So I'm going to let Andre talk about that, and then we'll conclude with some brief announcements, guys.
Definitely, and just want to point out that when we're recording this, it's the aftermath of Sunday at Augusta, as Tiger claimed his fifth green jacket, as projected by us on our second ever podcast episode. If you want to go back to our second episode on October 25th, we talked about, you know, this day, how it would finally come. So we just want to point that out. Congratulations to Tiger Woods, the best athlete of all time. But yeah, Josh was a great guest for our podcast. He offered a lot of insight into what it was like building the company from the ground up, that is StockX. And it was cool for Christian and I. We're both sneakerheads. I myself had a business in high school that involved the resale game with sneakers and limited edition clothing from the likes of Supreme and Off-White and all those other kinds of things. So it was really cool to see his mindset behind that, how he was able to fend off competition when he first started, and how, you know, he got the company to where it is now, and also his future plans, which I thought were really, really eye-opening and cool. So I'm really excited to see those play out in the future, and I'm sure if anyone can do it, it's Josh. Just what he's done with the company thus far is super impressive. So this was a really cool episode. There's no video for this one, but again, there's a lot of value in just listening to this one, so enjoy the podcast, and as always, guys, share it with a friend. Like us on YouTube, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, and yeah, that's all we can ask. And other than that, enjoy the episode. What is up, everyone? Before we get into this brand new episode of Real Talk University, I wanted to deliver to you guys a message and a special offer from our sponsor, Audible. Audible is the largest audiobook platform on the planet, and they are offering our listeners, the Real Talk University podcast community, with a free 30-day trial of their platform, which includes one free audiobook. If you don't like Audible after 30 days for free, you could literally quit, end the subscription, and not be charged, and still get your one free audiobook. On this podcast, you guys know we stress the importance of self-education, personal development, reading, all that kind of stuff, and this is your opportunity. There's absolutely no excuse to not hop on this. We are offering a free 30-day trial. Test it out. If it's not something you like, no problem. There's literally no risk. You're getting a free audiobook, a free 30-day trial with the platform. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/realtalk. Again, that's audibletrial.com/realtalk. There's going to be a link in the show notes. Go ahead, sign up. Let us know what book you choose. Let us know what you think. And best of luck. But this literally, guys, is your key to success and your pathway to personal development. There's absolutely no excuse.
Hey, Christian, Andre, you have Josh.
Hey, what's up?
What's going on, Josh?
How's it going?
How are you?
Doing great. Good. Doing great.
Yeah, really grateful that you took the time to do this with us.
Yeah, no worries at all.
Cool. So we'll just get right. We'll get started right away. Not waste any of your time here.
So I'm Christian, and this is Andre, and we're Real Talk University, basically a podcast that looks to interview high-level entrepreneurs and people that have successfully monetized their passions in order to provide our college-level audience a good insight on what it's like to be successful outside of the classroom. So we'll run through a series of questions real quick here, and hopefully get a lot of good responses and get you on your way. And let's get right into it, right?
Yeah.
All good.
All right, so we're going to start out with a fun little question that we just thought of actually today. Could you tell us three things, two truths and a lie, and we'll try to guess which one is the lie out of the three?
So What's funny is, well, I'll give you the three truths of the lie, and then we can go. The first is that when I was 13 years old, I won a bronze medal in the Jewish Youth Olympics for ping pong. I have three graduate degrees, and I have 400 pairs of sneakers.
I'm going to say the second one is a lie.
I'm going to agree with that.
Man, that's fucked up. You don't think that I'm that smart? Disappointing. No, I actually have 5 graduate degrees.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm joking. I have 2. there's a second one in there that, so everybody assumes that it's the, but it's true. I really did win a bronze medal in the Jewish Youth Olympics for ping pong, the Maccabi game.
That's awesome.
I was 13, and I actually lost to a 9-year-old girl.
Oh, my God.
She was Russian. They didn't have a division for girls. And so this 9-year-old girl was, and she was too young, and she was playing in our division, and she crushed everybody.
Oh, my God.
They had, like, wow, some kind of crazy spin in Russia that no one knows how to, like, defend. So I'm still a little bitter about that, but okay.
Awesome. Yeah, we just started testing that question today. Rather than just saying, like, who you are, what you do, like, I feel like everyone asks that. So
it does help. So here's the thing on that question, because I've been in different groups where, like, they use that as an icebreaker at different times. It's helpful to have a little bit of time there to think a little bit more through and make it up, you know, because, yeah. Like, technically, the last one was a lie also, because I think I have, like, 380 pairs of sneakers, but, you know, yeah, we're in the right ballpark.
Good to know.
All right, so we're going to hop right into your experience with sneakers. Obviously, it's a big passion of both of ours and obviously yours. So how did your experience with Campless help you to set out to create StockX?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting here is because how old are you guys?
19.
Yeah, we're both 19.
So, you know, I mean, I was, you know, probably very similar to you guys when I was 19, but I'm 41 now. So, you know, when I was 19, I mean, first of all, there's no internet, but or the internet was basically just invented. It was really similar. Like I grew up playing basketball when Jordan played. I always wanted Air Jordans. My mom would never buy me Air Jordans. As soon as I got my first job, like, we bought Air Jordans. Like, we all have the exact same story from my sort of generation, if you're sort of between a certain age. And so, you know, for me though, as I was became an entrepreneur and started different businesses, I almost intentionally avoided trying to create a business around sneakers. Like, I was trying to basically separate business and pleasure. I basically didn't want to create a business that was just an excuse to play with sneakers. And so I didn't create Campless until it was essentially a side project. When I had a full-time job and I was at IBM and I sort of needed a side hustle. And so when it's a side hustle, you certainly err towards your passions and the things that you're interested in. And so, you know, if that had never happened, right, if I never go to IBM, if I never sort of give myself an excuse to create a business around sneakers, then maybe none of this ever happens, right? And Campless obviously becomes StockX. Campless as a price guide is sort of the data layer that powered what then would become StockX. So it was really just an evolution of that same idea in the same company. But there's this, you know, thought that maybe it never happens if I just stay in the startup world, because, you know, maybe I never have that sort of permission again to create a business around my own personal passion.
Right. So were you involved with the sneaker game at all in terms of reselling or camping out in line to get the shoes at retail before you thought of Campless and StockX, or was that really your first time getting into the whole thing?
Oh, no. I mean, I literally have shoes from when I was in, you know, eighth grade. I actually have the same pair of shoes I wore to play, like, high school or to, like, middle school tennis in seventh grade. I still have those. I still have the basketball shoes I wore when I was a junior in high school. And it was all the same, right? It was like, you know, I grew up in the era of, you know, did you know, and Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood and all those, like, classic Nike commercials where, like, that was, like, my whole life. My whole room was, like, covered of, like, Nike posters of, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it was just, there was less of a way for people without disposable income to go spend, you know, $200, $300 on a pair of shoes every week. And, like, the really great thing about the evolution of the sneaker resale market is it makes it really easy to basically fund your collection. Like if you're a 19-year-old kid, if you're a 14-year-old kid, right? Like if you want to hustle a little bit and figure out how to sell two or three pairs of shoes, you can fund, you know, one pair of shoes and you can sort of build your collection that way, where it wasn't as easy to do that before the internet, when it was a very sort of local underground thing. And so then it's like, well, man, how am I getting, you know, $100, $150 to buy a pair of shoes? It was crazy to think that I was going to, you know, $125 the first pair of Jordans, you know, when I crossed that threshold. So I'd been in it for a while, but I didn't buy my first pair of Jordans until 2000, which was about 6 months after I graduated college and had my first job.
Wow.
That's really cool. Yeah. And just a little bit of background with me, like the idea behind StockX and all that. Like I, like you said, like you could buy sneakers nowadays and like resell them and use that profit to like actually keep a pair. So that was like kind of my business model when I was like in high school. I started like add to cart companies. Like when the Yeezys started to trend, like the Turtle Doves first came out and the like the resale was crazy. Like you could buy one of those pairs and like your next four shoes would be free. And it was just cool to kind of like watch StockX like grow, because like I remember just trying to hustle and sell sneakers like on the Twitter timeline, and that was just always a pain. So like it was just, I just think it's cool like that I got to experience firsthand like the rise of your company and how it actually like provided a major solution to what a lot of people like me were dealing with.
Yeah, and you know, and it kind of levels a playing field so that, you know, if you're just trying to hustle and sell a couple pairs, you know, if you were, you know, try to sell that on eBay where you have, you know, you don't have 10,000 sales and all the seller history, or you go to Twitter and you're not like, you know, one of the guys that's like known on Twitter, it makes it really hard, right? But
exactly.
It shouldn't be that way. Like you have this asset, it's worth a certain amount of money, like you should be able to get, you know, fair market price for it. And so that was a big part of it. But, you know, for me, when I was, you know, your age, like I think my first like business was selling chewing gum in sixth grade, and then like awesome. Candy in like ninth grade. And, you know, it was like, it was candy and baseball cards was like the hustle. Like when I was, you know, in middle school and high school, that, by the way, didn't have nearly the ROI that sneakers does to be able to fund that. But that's what it was, but, you know, before the internet and, you know, in that, and now it's writing bots or it's, you know, it's hustling and camping out in sneakers because, you know, the ROI is worth it.
Yeah, 100%. So like, could you trace back to like a moment in time where you thought of the idea for StockX, or was it kind of like a progressive idea?
Well, so it's definitely progressive, right? Like the one kind of like, I don't know, piece of advice or the one thought about is it's all just like one foot in front of the other, right? Like at no point were we like, you know what, let's start a $1 billion company that's going to change all of e-commerce. Like it's, you know, it is totally one foot in front of the other. And they sort of, it logically leads itself. But if you follow the core of it, which was the core was always around the idea of fair market value, right? Campless was just a price guide. All we were doing in 2012, 2013 was collecting eBay data, collecting eBay, you know, auctions to figure out what are sneakers actually worth. We had this skewed view of value back then because the only place you could very easily go look and find the value of a pair of shoes was to go to Flight Club. Flight Club was the only place that had a single product page and you could see some historical sales. And, you know, anyone that really knows anything about sneakers knows that, you know, Flight Club is drastically overpriced. And there's a reason why, and they have a different customer, and that's fine. But, you know, for the rest of the market to understand of what's the true value, it's just not the case. And so, but that thread ties through all of it. Now, obviously where we are and the business is a lot different than when it was just trying to build a price guide, but it's still today is, you know, StockX is the price guide now for the industry where people go there to see what the true market price is.
Yeah, 100%. Like obviously you guys were able to solve like a lot of problems that already existed in the sneaker world. And like eBay too, there were also the problem with like not having verified whether the shoes were real or not, not knowing who the seller was, all that kind of stuff that obviously were problems that arisen. So how were you able to team up with Dan Gilbert? Was that like a connection you had beforehand, or was that through investors, or how'd that happen?
Yeah, that's maybe the like one of the craziest parts about this whole thing because, you know, I'd never met Dan before. I'd never been to Detroit. And honestly, my knowledge of his, range of businesses was pretty limited. I knew Dan from the Cavs and Quicken Loans, and that was about it. And the short version of a very long story is that essentially Dan and I had the exact same idea independently. And, you know, like I said, we didn't know each other and been there. And we really came at it from very different sides. You know, mine was very ground up in the sneaker world, you know, trying to understand value of sneakers. And it was this idea of, this idea of a sneaker stock market, you know, this concept of a stock market for commerce would work really well for sneakers. And Dan was kind of top down. He has no ties to the sneaker industry and doesn't wear sneakers himself, but he'd always had this bigger idea around a stock market of things, that this would be a more efficient way to buy or sell anything. And then he was actually exposed to sneakers through one of his sons and him buying and selling sneakers on eBay at the time. And so it was just really just crazy serendipity that, you know, maybe the only other person in the world trying to do the exact same thing at the exact same time happens to be one of the most successful business people in the world. Crazy for so many
good person to be a company.
yeah, that's
100%, 100%. And so not unlike when we started Campus, I could never have planned that I was going to go, you know, have the same idea as, you know, as Dan Gilbert, and that we were going to join forces. I mean, you can't plan that, right? So a lot of these things happened. It was very serendipitous.
Yeah, that's really cool. So when did you come up for the name, or with the name StockX? Was that something that just came to you before or like after you started?
Well, so, you know, the company was called Campless, and we knew we were turning it into a marketplace. Yep. And it was actually one of the most, I don't want to say contentious, you know, decisions we made. There were seven of us at the time, seven of us and then Dan. And, you know, the name that they were using before I got there, basically they had the idea and then found me and we got together and I was the fifth person, but they were using sort of a placeholder name of Soul Trade. And Soul Trade was sort of a playoff of like Ameritrade, or like, you know, you have these like online things. And I was like, look, I was like, I get the logic, but I was like, it can't have the word soul in it. It can't have soul or sneaker or kick, or like, it's gotta be something that's generic, because it's not just about sneakers. And we all agreed on that point. And then it was just hard to figure out something. And we kind of like kept falling back on, well, maybe it should just be Campless. You know, it doesn't really mean anything, but it has a unique name. And it was like, honestly, the process of choosing the name was just elbow grease. It was like hours in the room of like on whiteboards, going through, talking through. And actually no one can really remember who came up with StockX. I came up with Stock Market X at one point, and someone probably shortened it. And and so it was like, honestly, it was just like process of just hours in a room, and we somehow came up with it. But then there's a final piece of that. You can come up with the best name in the world, and this is a really good sort of a thought, is like, but if you can't get the .com, right, then you don't go with it. Like, it doesn't matter how great the name is. Like, if you can't get the .com, then you go with something else. And, you know, there was this, for a while, we wanted to name the company Matter, M-A-T-T-E-R, matter.com. And we can forget about why that's not a good name at all, but what we thought we wanted it to be. And then we looked up, and Mark Cuban owns matter.com.
Really?
And basically flat out refused to even consider selling it. And we sort of like back channeled through Dan, and Mark Cuban's just like, no. And Dan's like, you don't want to talk about price? And he's like, no. I'm like, okay. I think it still redirects to a site that sells Mark Cuban t-shirts, right? Like, whatever, right? But, and so that one went out the door. And StockX, we were able to buy from some guy that randomly had it for, I don't know, like $3,500 or something. I mean, it was like, it wasn't being used. And so we showed up and bought it. So
that's so cool.
So obviously when you were first starting out, you had some competition with the likes of Goat and Grailed and stuff like that. So how were you able to separate yourselves from those type of people?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Goat launched about 8 months ahead of us and had a nice head start. And I think they're a really good business. And I think that if we had a different end goal, we might look more like Goat. But Grailed as well. Like, I actually, I use Grailed. I still buy stuff on Grailed. And I think Grailed is really useful for certain things. But, you know, it's all about the model. You know, StockX is a unique model. This idea of a stock market for commerce, it doesn't really exist. And, you know, the reason we've been able to catch up and pass those guys is that this model is just a better model. It just is for certain products. Now, we still had to go out and execute that and you know, hire people and build the company and SEO and digital marketing and brand and customer service and everything else. So you still have to execute it. But the logic of it, like, think about it. We didn't make this up. the stock market has been the most efficient form of commerce for 200 years. And all we did was point it from these commodities, from stocks and bonds and oil and gas, to new commodities, to sneakers and watches and handbags. And so that logic was pretty sound. And that's 100% of the reason that we've been able to outgrow those businesses. And, you know, I think Goat, for example, they've basically taken a couple really good things from a couple different good models. Like, they authenticate and have a single product page like we do. They vet their sellers and control pricing to some extent the way consignment does. They have used, so that you can see pictures of certain shoes the way eBay does. So like, Goat has just sort of taken the best of like the other sneaker marketplaces and built a good business. Grailed is just eBay. Grailed is just the eBay model skin for streetwear. And they came along at a good time, and they were ahead of everyone on the curve of like creating, going after that market. But the model itself is just eBay, and every problem that exists in eBay exists in Grailed, right? But so again, it's all about the model, and you know, I'll probably say that 10 more times throughout the rest of it. Yep. But it's really true.
Yeah, and then a part of the model is definitely the app itself. Like, I think the layout of your app is terrific, with like the picture where you can swipe it around, like the 3D form. And then with the price of the last recently sold them with the graph. So what were some of your tactics in trying to build up that app interface?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When we started, back to the concept of the model and just the idea that, you know, that we weren't making this up. So the hypothesis was pretty sound, but the challenge was, could we build a consumer goods marketplace? Could we build a website where 14-year-old kids could figure out how to buy and sell Yeezys without having to teach 14-year-old kids how the stock market works? Right? Which was, you know, if we had to teach every kid how the market works, and it was probably a pretty big uphill battle that we weren't going to win. And so a lot of times we think that we have succeeded either because of the UI and the design that we happen to be able to create a really good interface, or maybe that like 14-year-old kids want Yeezy so bad that it doesn't matter, right? They would step over their mother in line to figure out how to get a pair, so they'll figure out how to use the stock market. I don't know, maybe it's a little of a little of B, but you know, when we started this thing, we were super fortunate to have a really great product designer who's now our chief design officer, and then to hire some really good product designers along the way, including one of our guys who is, you know, early on product designer at Facebook. You know, if you're a mobile app or a website, if you're an app, like, there's literally nothing more important, right? Like, you can have the greatest technology in the world, the greatest idea in the world, but if no one can use it, then it doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
And then another key aspect, like you were talking about with the stock market, is the free market system. So what was your reasoning behind like letting buyers and sellers determine prices? Would you just figure that it would work out in the end and everything would kind of reach an equilibrium?
Yeah, I mean, you know, buyers and sellers determine pricing in every marketplace. It's just a question of whether you want to constrain that in any way. And so the default should be, it should be a free market. Now, that's not what happens, right? In most of the world, right? Or most of, let's take like eBay, right? eBay, you have one seller that's choosing to sell something. They can either choose the price and create buy it now, and then the whole world can either decide, yes, they want to buy it, or no, they don't. Or you can create an auction and maybe you'll get one person to pay, you know, as much as you want. But, you know, you just don't have full information in that scenario, right? Like, you want as much information as possible to figure out what is this thing actually worth. And so the stock market has proven that, right? The concept of value has always been, you know, best when everybody can participate. And so that's what the model is, right? It's a live bid-ask system. The exact same way that a share of Nike stock is priced is how a pair of Nikes is priced, which is every buyer in the world and every seller in the world all come to the exact same place. And they all say what they want to buy it or sell it for, and the market wins out. And so that was always the idea, and you know, it's worked out pretty well.
Yep.
Yeah.
So for the shoe first coming on the market, how does that kind of work out? Like, say an Off-White first hit StockX, what does the first like sale go to? Is it whatever the seller determines, or do you guys have any kind of say in that at all, or nothing?
No, we don't have no say whatsoever. You know, it's buyers and sellers. Buyers are placing bid, sellers are placing ask. But what's really powerful about that is, you know, you could go to a product page where there's literally nothing listed for sale, you know, because we create the product page, but we don't create any bids or any ask. So you can go to a page and there's literally nothing for sale there, but a buyer can place a bid and say, you know, I'm willing to pay $300 for this shoe.
Oh, wow.
All right. And then anyone in the world can come and accept that bid and sell it to them. That idea of a seller executing the sale. Like, that's the really, that's like, for lack of a less cliche way of saying it, that's the truly revolutionary thing about this whole model, which is that, you know, in the rest of the e-commerce world, there's a buy button and a price. And the buyer can decide, I can either buy it, yes or no. But in StockX and the stock market, there's also a sell button and a price. Right? So think about it. If you want to sell a share of Nike stock on the New York Stock Exchange, you don't list it for sale and write a description and take pictures of it and hope someone comes and buys your Nike stock. Like, no, like you go to the market, Nike's trading at $70 and you can sell it at $70 whenever you want. That's the really powerful part of this, and that you can sell a pair of sneakers literally, I mean, once you have an account, but you can sell a pair of sneakers by just clicking one button. Like, that's it. You don't have to listen to ask. You don't have to take pictures, upload, just like any of that stuff. Literally just one click and the sale is done.
Yeah, that's actually an aspect I never really was aware of, with the whole, the seller puts the price there and then the buyer can accept. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And like, have you ever ran into any problems with that? Like someone like putting a bid that they no longer like wanted to have up there? And like, if you like sell your shoes to someone that put a certain bid and like they want to retract that, or?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of having a system where, you know, things can sit out there. When you place a bid, the default bid, I think, is 30 days, but you can do anywhere from like 1, 3, 7, 30 or 60 days. And that bid, though, is tied to your PayPal, it's tied to your credit card, right? So it's a live bid. And so there definitely have been cases where, you know, a buyer will say, oh, I forgot about it, or, you know, I don't want it anymore, et cetera. And we'll work through that. And that's why we have a, you know, a massive customer service team. We have about, I think, 80 or 85 people in customer service. But, you know, at a high level, like, that's how the market works, right? Like, that's how the site works. And so, you know, as people understand how it works, then it's on them to monitor their bids. But it's a super powerful thing to be able to understand. What it is, it's understanding demand, which is a really, really scarce thing. It's really hard to understand what demand truly is. Supply, we know supply. Supply is however many widgets someone will make. But demand is, it's a forecast, it's an estimate off of last year, it's a projection. You know, having true consumer demand is really super powerful, and that's what a bid is on StockX.
Yeah, especially in the sneaker game, or not even the sneaker game, but just like luxury goods in general, like it could be unpredictable, just depending on how like the market receives it.
Yep.
And then also, like, obviously you guys, like you mentioned, we're 8 months behind Go, among other competitors. So I'm sure like social media had a lot to do with your success. So like, what were some of your social media tactics early on to kind of help you guys build steam and build awareness for your brand?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that in 2019 or say 2016, we started the company. You know, in 2016 and certainly moving forward, every company needs to be a media company. And, you know, for us today, we have, I don't know, our content team has about maybe 30 people in it, and will continue to grow. And so for us, it was, you know, investing in content and a content team on day one, to be able to have other ways to, you know, engage with social, with marketing in general, rather than just straight, you know, marketing. But so you have a social team, you have a content team, your marketing team, your performance marketing, right? So you really do have to be a part of it. You know, PR is a big part of it as well, as you get to the point where, you know, you have a story to tell and can do that. But, you know, for social and out there, it was around, you know, having a content team as well. So it wasn't just, you know, hey, come to StockX. We could actually provide value out to everyone. And that was always in the form of data and in being the price guide. And that's still core through our DNA today, is to be that price guide.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I think just especially nowadays, like every company is having a social media presence. So like, if you're not on there, you're just going to be left behind, really. So, so moving on to like a major theme of our podcast being like finding your passion and making a lifestyle out of it. So like, obviously sneakers and data are some of your passions. So what is some of your advice for other people out there trying to find their passions?
Yeah, you know, anytime I'm asked about sort of advice around startup or passion or you know, business or anything, you know, I have two pieces of advice that are super simple and basic, but are massively important. And so the first is talk to everybody about everything. So many people are nervous. They think that someone's going to steal their idea. They think they need an NDA to go talk to somebody. But, like, ideas are worthless. You know, execution is the only thing that matters. Ideas are a dime a dozen. I can't tell you, you know, how many people after I launched StockX, you know, emailed me and said, oh, I had the exact same idea, whatever. And, like, I don't doubt it. Like, we didn't make that up. Right? You know, we stole the idea from the stock market. So, but it's all about execution. So, you know, it's about, you know, if you have ideas, you want to try to do something, go talk to everybody about it. Find people to work with, find people to help refine the idea, find people to introduce you to other people. And that only happens by going out there and talking to everybody. Honestly, if you have an idea that's so great and you're worried about someone's going to steal it, I mean, if you go sit down with somebody, you tell somebody that idea, and this person is so good that they can go execute your idea better than you. And by the way, they have nothing else to do but steal your idea and go do that. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, you know, if that person's good enough to do that, they're probably working on something. They're not just sitting around waiting to steal someone's idea. Like, that, it's so far from what happens. So the first one is talk to everyone about everything. And the second is just do something, which is even more cliche and basic. But, you know, for me, in the very early days, we were cleaning eBay data. Like, that was what, like, 90% of my life was in, like, million row Excel spreadsheets, you know, writing queries to clean, you know, Excel data. And there's no way at the time I was like, oh, this is going to lead me to building a $1 billion business with a billionaire. Like, no, like, not. Like, it was about, like, just moving something forward, which was, you know what, like, if we can do this, we can start to understand what the value of sneakers are, and there's something there. And so it's just, you know, do something to move the conversation and move the business forward, to put yourself in the position that, if you do happen to get an email one day out of the blue from, you know, from one of the most successful business people in the world, then, you know, you have something to talk about, and you haven't, and to show that you've done, even if that thing isn't a business, right? But for me, it was a big data set to talk about.
Yep. I think the big thing for people is when they start out, they want to be perfect with what they're doing. And that really sets them back, because you can't really be refined at something if you don't have experience in it. Like, even for us with the podcast, I think it was back in October, our first episode. If we listened to it right now, it would sound like complete trash. Like, the first few were not good. The first few interviews were subpar. Our technology's come a long way. Our abilities have come a long way. Our research has come a long way. So I think just going out and doing it is really the biggest key in that. So I just have a few more questions before we wrap up and do a little lightning round. So the first one for me is, what is your grail pair of sneakers?
So that's a tough question. I'm going to say the grail pair is something that I don't have, or I wish I did. There's just so many sneakers that I want. And, you know, like, it goes back, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. What's the first, like, thing that I think of that I wish I had these days? I don't know. Maybe like an Air Max 1 Parapata, something like that.
Wow.
The OGs.
So what does the future of StockX look like? Can we expect, like, a physical store, a big partnership?
Yeah, so, you know, the business grows in three ways. One is we sell the same things to more people, so geographic expansion. And we actually do have three physical pop-ups, and some are closing down, and we're going to transition to permanent soon. But New York, LA, and London, where we have physical pop-up stores. And so for first is about sort of just, like, becoming, you know, a mass awareness brand globally and selling the things we have. Second is adding other product categories. So we're probably going to add, like, art, collectibles, toys, prints, that sort of thing next. Wow. But the last way, and really the most exciting part, is working with brands to release products directly into the market, to literally IPO products into existence.
That's dope.
And that's really the future of this, is you start to bring the primary and secondary markets together in one place and work with them. So that's really the future.
So what would be, like, your value prop to those companies?
Yeah, I mean, it's about about letting the market set the price for a product. We did our first IPO at scale. We did about 3 weeks ago. You guys know who Ben Baller is?
Yeah, love Ben Baller.
Yeah, so we actually released a slide, a sandal with Ben. It just said Ben Baller did the chain on it, and there were two colors. It was a red and a black. And it was a true blind Dutch auction, which means that the market sets the price. And it's a unique method that lets the market set the price, but it makes it so it's a really fair market price. And the way it works is really simply, like, let's say there's 50 pairs of the black size 9. And everybody in the world knows there's 50 pairs. So everybody just bids blindly for whatever they want to pay for that.
Yep.
And then the top 50 bidders win. But the way it works is, let's say the number one bidder bid $1,000 and the number 50th bidder bid $200. And there were 50 pairs. If there are 50 pairs, then the 50th bid becomes the clearing price. And so in that case, it'd be $200. And then everybody pays the clearing price. So wow. Even if you bid $1,000, you pay $200. So in that scenario, 49 of 50 people get that product for less than what they were willing to bid, right? But what happens is, because it's an IPO, because it's an auction, the price ends up being really high. So in the case of, for us, and this is a long way of getting how the value prop, but that slide would have retailed for $70 if we just sold it retail. We did it. We ran a blind Dutch auction. They cleared an average price of $210.
Wow.
But every one of those people, or almost all of them, got it for less than what they were willing to pay. And then the second the IPO was over, we turned on the secondary market, and then they were selling for $350. So the economic theory of how a blind Dutch auction worked played out perfectly, which is these shoes went into the market greater than retail, but less than resale. And so if you take away the whole process and what this would have happened in a normal scenario. In a normal scenario, if they were retail for $70, and we know the resale market is $350, what would have happened is everybody and their mother would have been trying to buy them at retail for $70, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get it, you would have had this mass chaos. People would sleep outside of sneaker stores and pay off people and write bots and all the chaos that you guys know that goes into acquiring that shoe at retail. But all that chaos goes away. And so what happens is all that goes away. All that energy goes into people paying a little bit more, right? And so for the brand, in this case for Ben, he got $200 a slide instead of $70. But all those people got it for less than what they were willing to pay. And if they wanted, they could turn around and flip it for $350. So it's like a win-win-win across everywhere. What it does is it gets rid of just all the nonsense of releases and funnels it into an efficient mechanism to figure out how the market should price the product. It is, right. And this is how, again, we didn't make this stuff up. This is how the market works when they IPO stocks and you how you price it. So anyway, there's a lot more. And you guys should read the recap. It literally reads like a math textbook. It's like chart, table, like the whole thing. But it's a really, really big idea. And that's what we're trying to do.
That's awesome. That's so just sweet. Cutting edge. But are you good friends with Ben? Because we would love to be in contact with him. He'd be a great person to interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, we did this together. And he's been a big supporter of StockX for a while.
That's awesome. All right. So I just have one last question before we get into the lightning round here. I just want to ask, what does success mean to you?
Being able to do what you want to do and with the people you do. And so for me, I want to be an entrepreneur my whole life, no matter what happens with StockX, as good as it may turn out or if not. I just want to be able to keep starting businesses and do that and have my family with me while I do it.
Sweet. Awesome. So we're gonna do like a lightning round. It's just like four quick paced questions. So the first one is like, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self if you have like 10 to 15 seconds with him?
Be nicer.
Awesome. And the next one is, what was the worst piece of advice you've ever received? And then what was the best advice?
The best advice is fail fast. And that is such an important one as an entrepreneur. The second you know that something's not going to work, you know, you got to be willing to cut ties and, you know, sunk costs or sunk costs.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the worst advice is. I tend to hopefully block out what the bad advice is and keep moving. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. And the next one is like, what would you say your best purchase of $100 or less was?
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I bought so much random stuff in my life. My best purchase $100 or less. It's lightning round. I feel like I'm struggling even.
No, a failed. Lot of people trip out on this.
Yeah, I totally failed. Apparently I buy stuff that's too expensive.
No problem. And then the last one we have is like, what message would you put on a billboard for the whole world to see, like a quote or a saying that you live by?
Oh, just the big stock XX. No words, just the X. that's the goal. Like the Snapchat, you know, ghost and you know, just the X. That's it.
That's awesome.
All right.
Well, it was really nice talking to you, man. Really a big fan of yours and what you guys are doing, and looking forward to seeing where you guys take it.
I appreciate the support. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.